You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
We have been working our way through the Sermon on the Mount. It's one of the most important and famous passages in all of the Bible, because in this sermon we have the core of Jesus' teachings. And today we come to a teaching on how we relate to money and possessions. For most of us, our relationship with money and possessions goes way back, early in life. I don't know if you remember your first memory about money. Mine was, I was about 8 or 9 years old. It was the first time I came into some real money. And I don't remember how much it was, but for a kid that age, I had gathered quite a bit of cash. And somebody took me out shopping. Don't even remember who it was, because that doesn't matter. The stuff is what matters. I bought so much stuff, and then I even remember having to buy a bag to put all the stuff in. That's how glorious that day was. And I came home, and I was parading through the house with all of my stuff. And my parents were like, how did he get all that stuff? Like, how did he get the money for that stuff? He doesn't have a job. And they began to do some investigating, and they discovered that the way I came into that money was in my brothers and sisters' bedrooms. My oldest brother and sister are 10 years older than me, so they had jobs. My sister was a waitress, and she collected all of her tips in this cup in her closet. Super easy to pilfer from. She didn't keep track. And so I had to go and confess to my brother and sister. I had to make restitution. I had to get rid of my stuff. That was the first of many good conversations about money in my life. I've never stopped needing to talk about money and the power of it and the deceptiveness of it and the lure of it in our lives. That's probably why Jesus talks about money so much, probably more than any other subject. He talks about money. And I think there's a couple reasons. One is money is a very tangible access point into our lives. When Jesus talks about money, he's hardly ever just talking about money. He's also talking about your hopes, your fears, the way that you relate to people around you. Jesus is often trying to figure out what's going on inside your life, and he uses money to get there. Another reason is, I think he knows our tendency to want to compartmentalize our money and things. So we would like to think that money is this thing over here. We do that over here, and over here is our spiritual and social and personal life. And it's best, you know, just keep those things separate. And I think one of the reasons Jesus is bringing up money over and over and over and over again is to remind us that these things are not separate. How we relate to money and possessions is very much central to our relationship with each other, our relationship with God. It is a central aspect of our life in the kingdom, which is what he's been talking about all along. To put it very bluntly, if you want to know whether or not Jesus is really changing your life, follow the money. Follow the money in your life. That tells the true story. Now, we're only looking at 6 verses. And so, obviously, we're not going to say everything that could be said about money. And that's difficult because whenever we talk about money, people have a lot of questions. You want details. Some of you will want more nuance than I'm going to give to this. But I want you to see something important. In this passage, Matthew 6, verse 19 through 24, I want you to notice how stark the language actually is. He's talking about heaven or earth, light or dark, God or money. There's not a lot of nuance in it, is there? And I think it's because it's supposed to hit us hard. Just the starkness of it is supposed to land on us, and we're supposed to be shocked and alarmed by it. Look, I would love to go get coffee with you and overthink this thing to death. I would love to just nuance the heck out of it all night long. Right? The problem is we would get to the end of that thinking that we'd really done something. But in actuality, our lives wouldn't have changed at all. And when you get to the end of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 7, you're going to see a group of people who listened to everything Jesus said. They heard it. They were very intellectually stimulated by it. It was inspiring. But it didn't change their lives. They didn't do anything with it. And Jesus calls them fools. Ultimately, their lives, he says, are going to crumble because of that. And so if you're the type of person that likes to overthink things, just a good word of caution to you today, a good help would be to try to not do that. try to ask yourself, what is God saying to me personally? What does he want me to do with these words? That would be helpful. I need to think that as well. All right, Matthew 6. We're going to just dive in here. Matthew 6, 19. If you don't have a Bible, you can. There's a little black Bible in the pews in front of you. It's page 4 in the New Testament. So flip all the way through the Old Testament, get to the New Testament. Page 4. Three things in this very short text. One is what Jesus wants us to do with our money and things. The second is why that's hard to do. And the third is how we can really do it. All right, so first thing, what does Jesus want us to do with our money and things? Verse 19. He says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So he's contrasting two ways of living. One way of living is to store up for yourself treasures on earth, and the other one is to store up for yourself treasures in heaven. And of course, the question is, well, what are treasures? And a simple definition of treasures, I think, is whatever it is you cherish, value, protect in your life. That's a treasure. And so last week, in the section previous to this, we saw that there are some people who treasure respect and attention and approval, and so they practice their righteousness to be seen by others. And to that, Jesus says, hey, there's a better treasure out there. Why don't you practice your righteousness unto God, and your Father who sees you in secret will reward you in secret. And so the earthly treasure is temporal and very superficial, and the heavenly treasure has substance. It lasts forever. It comes from God. That's an example of treasures. And I say that just to make clear that treasures here is broader than just money. However, the emphasis in this text that we're looking at today is money. In fact, if you look at the parallel text in Luke 12, it's even more clear that that is just really about money. And so in our verses, if you look at verse 24, you can see the word there. A lot of your translation says you can't serve God or money. It might say mammon. And mammon is just a word that means money and things money can buy. So I just want you to see, that's where the text is going. It has an emphasis on money, and so we're going to narrow our focus in the talk about treasures to money as well. I think Jesus would be happy for us to do that. So, with respect to money, storing up treasures for yourself on earth means accumulating money and possessions because of what you hope you'll gain from them. Right? For some people, storing up money and things is a way of trying to gain significance. It makes you feel like you have status and power in the world. And for other people, it's not about that at all. It's about security. Storing up money and things gives you a sense of safety or control in a very volatile world. And Jesus is just saying, either way, here's the wisdom I'm giving you. If you want significance or security, storing up money and possessions for yourself on earth is a bad strategy for that. If that's what you want, money is just a really bad way to get it. Why? Look at what he says in verse 19. Treasures on earth, there's moth and rust to destroy and thieves to break in and steal. So in the ancient world, wealth was not like, it wasn't money in banks like we have. It was goods that were stored up. And these goods were just vulnerable to decay, to destruction, to theft, devaluation. And Jesus is just saying, that's a bad strategy. It's so vulnerable, so insecure. His point is simply that just treasures on earth don't last. And even if you could make them last your whole life, you're going to die. And they won't last past that. He tells this parable both in Matthew and Luke, but in Luke 12, he says this parable that says this. The land of a rich man was produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, well, what shall I do with this windfall? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, I'll do this. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, just listen to the self-talk of the person who stores up treasure for themselves. I'll say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? And then he says, so is the one who lays up treasures for himself and is not rich toward God. Now, the parable is not condemning saving. That's not the point. The point is that this man thinks that all of his money is just for him. He already has more enough, right? I mean, he has more than he needs. His barns are already full. That's why he has to build new ones. So he has plenty. And so when he gets this windfall, he keeps it for himself, even though he has plenty. He's oblivious to, or at least negligent of, the needs of the people around him. Why not use the windfall for others? Because he just thinks it all belongs to him. And notice, his ability to enjoy the present, to relax, eat, drink, and be merry, it's rooted in his sense of security in the future. He says, you have much laid up, so therefore, relax. If you can't relax, apart from whatever your savings is, you got a money problem, right? Jesus says, you fool, you think this is the life? You think money can save you? All of this stuff goes away. You go away someday. You should have invested your money in things that last. That's what he says. Again, it's not wrong to save money. There's the nuance you want. I'll give you a little bit. Here's what's being forbid here. John Stott puts it this way. What Jesus forbids here is the selfish accumulation of goods, extravagant and luxurious living, hard-heartedness, which does not feel the colossal need of the world's underprivileged. The foolish notion that a person's life consists in the abundance of his possessions and the materialism that tethers our hearts to the things of earth. That's what he condemns. And that's what it means to store up treasures for yourself on earth. Now, in contrast, storing up for yourself treasures in heaven means using your money and your things and your resources for kingdom purposes. That's a wise investment because the treasures in heaven are secure. They don't decay. They never lose value. So what are treasures in heaven? Well, anything that pleases God and aids his purposes in the world. Well, how do you know what that is? You get to know God. Paul says in Ephesians 5, when he talks about walking in wisdom, he says the way you do that is you try to learn what is pleasing to God. Like, how do I know what's pleasing to my wife? 24 years of just firsthand experience. That's how I know. I have to keep learning it. So listen, Jesus is not here to give us a set of new financial rules. He's here to give us new life. He's here to give us a relationship with the Father, so that we can walk in a way that's pleasing to him, so that we can invest our lives in his kingdom. All right, that's the wisdom Jesus gives for how to handle money and possessions. If you want to invest in things that last, stop spending so much money on yourself and redirect it to others. Spend it on the kingdom. Now, here comes the punchline. That was a pretty good punchline, but this is the real punchline. Verse 21. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. See? It's not just about wise investing, is it? It's about your heart. Your heart is your will, your spirit. It's the center of your life. This is about your life. Money has the power to shape your life, to focus your heart. Where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be also. On one hand, this is a pretty good diagnostic, isn't it? If you want to know where your heart really is, follow the money. Right? So what do you spend money on? Not like what do you have to spend money on, but what do you spend it on willfully, joyfully, easily? right? If somebody spends just an inordinate amount of money on clothes, then where's their heart? Probably an image, right? If you spend an inordinate amount of money and time on kids and kids' activities, where's your heart as a parent? Probably your happiness is tied up in the happiness or the performance of your kids. If you spend an inordinate amount of money to save, where's your heart? Probably in safety and security by storing up for the future. What if you spend an inordinate amount of money to give and be generous? What does that tell you? It tells you your heart's in the kingdom. Where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. Follow the money. Now, it's a good diagnostic, but there's also something really instructive here that I don't want us to miss. If our heart follows our money, then there's something really practical that we can apply here. It means you can focus your heart simply by giving your money. If you want a heart that's focused on kingdom things, Jesus seems to be saying, well, you can just start by giving to kingdom things. Most of us, when we think about giving, we're like, well, I'm just going to wait until my heart's really into something, and then I'm going to invest there. I just think Jesus is flipping this on its head and saying, look, your heart is just wherever your money is. So give and see how your heart will follow. See how that will direct your energies and your life. You don't have to be like all or nothing about this. You can just start really simple. Just take some of the money that you're spending on yourself currently and redirect it to needs around you. And just see how God might grow your heart for those needs. Like if you ask my kids to pray for any country in the world besides maybe the one we live in, my hunch is they're going to pray for Guatemala. Why? Because we've just invested a lot in Guatemala. As a church, as a family, I've probably been there 5 or 6 times. Both of my kids have raised money and spent money to go themselves. We, a few years ago as a family, started supporting a Guatemalan child through Compassion International. Like, we've just talked about that. We've invested a lot. And all that investment just means that's probably where my kid's heart is when you just think about nations. It's real simple. That's what Jesus wants us to do with our money. Invest in the kingdom. Now, let's dig a little deeper. Why is that so hard to do? It's pretty straightforward, but it's really hard to do. And the reason is because money has a way of blinding us to money or to our issues with money. Look at verse 22. He says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. Meaning, like if you can see, you'll be able to move around easily, right? Because you're in the light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If you can't see, then it doesn't matter how much light there is in the room, you won't be able to navigate your way around. You can't see. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? Jesus is just comparing the way our eyesight works to our quote-unquote heart sight. He's saying, if your heart is focused on the things of the kingdom, it will bring health and wholeness to your entire life. You'll understand, you'll be able to perceive the relative value of things in the world. And so like a wise person, you'll just invest in the things that last and not in the things that don't, because you see clearly. If you're focused on the things of the world, it will impair your ability to see things for what they really are. You'll end up putting an inordinate value on something and giving your life to things that don't last. You'll be like a person walking around in the dark, just grasping for something to hold on to steady your life. And the problem is that none of it will hold you up. Now, here's the real problem. You won't even know you're in the dark. You'll think that you're seeing clearly, but you won't be. That's the power of money. It blinds you to the fact that you're blind. Most sins, Tim Keller talks about how most sins, people know they're doing them. You know, if you're lying, you know you're lying. If you're stealing, you know you're stealing. If you're committing adultery, you know. Right? Nope. Nobody ever gets caught in adultery and their defense is, I didn't know. I thought it was my spouse. It was dark in there. You know, that would be a crazy defense. Nobody would buy that. Most sins, you know when you're doing them. Money sins are deceptive. Like Jesus talks about it so much, and yet most of us don't think we have an issue here. We don't think it's us. Like most of us came in here today not thinking, man, I have a money problem. If we were, we were thinking the problem is that we don't have enough money. That's what we were thinking. But most of us were not like, man, I just really struggling with money issues. I hope the preacher talks about money today. None of you thought that, right? Why? Why is money so blinding? Because it's the water we swim in. Most of you have heard or heard of David Foster Wallace's commencement speech, right, where he begins a little parable of two fish swimming in the water, and an older fish comes by and says, hey, boys, how's the water today? And he keeps going, and two young fish swim along for a while, and finally one of them looks at the other one and he says, what the heck is water? Right? And the point David Foster Wallace says is that the most obvious, important realities are often the ones that are hardest to see and to talk about. We swim in waters of greed and materialism and consumerism and covetousness every day, and it's so normal we don't even think it's a problem. And if we think it's a problem, we're just barely scratching the surface. We don't see the depth of it. Money blinds us to what we have in this way. Like in most of our social circles, because of the way our society is structured, we almost, all of us are always around people who have more than us. Right? Just by the nature of being in a church where people come from lots of different backgrounds and socioeconomic statuses, you're around people right now who make more money than you, a lot more money than you. Right? And you make more money than some other people who are in the room. And that's true at work and in your social circles everywhere. And the result is that we constantly are thinking, we're not very rich. We don't really have that much, you know, because we're comparing to all the people around us. But I mean, step back. We live in the upper percentage of the richest country in the history of the world. And yet most of us are like, man, I am really strapped financially. I've had conversations with people, multiple people, who are just really stressed out. And they're like, man, I don't know how I'm going to make it all work. And I've had to just tell them bluntly, listen, I say this as a friend, you make four times as much money as I do, and somehow I'm making it work. And then I have turned around in the same week, true story, and been super stressed out about college and retirement. And I'm thinking, how am I going to make all this work? And I realize, man, I have more problems than that guy. He has a standard of living problem. I have that and a trust problem. It's just so deceptive. We do these things called gospel change projects. We've done them with a lot of people, leaders, equipping classes, all kinds of people. Many of you have done them. And the first thing you do is you identify a problem area in your life, something you want to change, something you want to see God change. Now, I haven't seen all of the gospel change projects we've done, but to my knowledge, I've never seen one where someone said greed or materialism or even generosity. That's never been somebody's change project as far as I know. How could that possibly be? How could this be the number one subject in Jesus' teaching and we don't think it's a problem for us? Because it's deceptive. That's the power of money to blind us to our money problems. It's either that or we just don't want to go there. We don't want to, we know it's a problem. We don't want to look. Why don't you want to look? Because your eyes have been darkened. Money makes you not want to look. I think a good takeaway for us, if we get nothing else, is just to ask the simple question to ourselves and to others around us. Am I deceived about this? Are there financial blind spots in my life? And nobody's telling you because we want to keep it over there, keep it separate, but just to invite people to say, go ahead, you can tell me. What do you see? Because you can't see it yourself. You got to invite others in. Just ask the question and see where that takes you. I heard this story this week of two guys. You may have heard this story. It's out there. I think they wrote a book. But these guys each were young, single men. No, one's, maybe they're both married. I don't know. Young dudes, married or maybe not. Doesn't matter. They both make pretty good money. and they're on track to make a lot of good money, right? And there's just this one stepping stone they need to take, which is to go to Harvard Business School. And they go for different reasons, but for both of them, the reason is this is going to be the catapult that sets me into lots and lots of money. Now, both of the guys are Christians. One of them is a saver, and so his ambition in life is to like just stockpile a ton of money. That's his security. Now, the other one is not a saver. He's a spender. He makes more money than the other guy, and he spends way more money than the other guy. His ambition in life is just to enjoy all the good things in this world. Both Christians, both tithe at the time, both giving 10% of their money. And this just feels really normal to them. So on to Harvard Business School. They meet in a Bible study. And so they start to talk with each other about how to follow Jesus and what it really means. And of course, because they're so money-oriented, that becomes part of the conversation. And they decide together to take a class in the divinity school there. And a class is on God and money. And there they begin to read all of the texts about what God says about money. They begin to read case studies about how money is used and abused and misused in the world. And they start to get really challenged with their ambitions. Really convicted about how they relate to money and possessions. It leads them to do this massive research project where they surveyed hundreds of Harvard alum who are Christians. You might not have known there were hundreds of Harvard alum who are Christians. But they surveyed them and asked them lots of detailed questions about their finances, what they make, what they give to, why they give. And they got all this data back and they were really shocked by the data. They found a large group of people who are giving away lots, huge percentages of their income. And so they did these follow-up interviews. They called them, and they were like, I want to hear the narrative about this. And as they talked through the stories, they were totally blown away, one, by the amount of just sacrificial generosity that people were doing, but two, by the amount of joy and purpose they heard in these people's voices. When I say, some of this stuff is just crazy. Like, there's one guy who he could retire today and be richer than all of us for the rest of his life. But he literally said to them, actually, the Bible warns about stockpiling a bunch of money, and so I just don't have very much money saved. And they were like, well, how do you do that? How do you get rid of all this money? He has these strategies. I'm not commending this. I'm just showing you how radical this guy was. One strategy was he bought like a bunch of life insurance policies so that he couldn't have that money, but if something happened to him, at least his family would have some money. His other strategy was to tie up his money in all kinds of things that he couldn't get to so that he would have to keep working. He could retire now. He's like, actually, I'm going to retire, and I'm going to be fine when I retire. I'm just going to make it so that I have to take the long road, so that I can't ever just sit back and say, you have lots stored up. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. And so it's just story after story like this, and of people who are giving generously, and they just found like, man, these people have so much joy, so much purpose. It caused them to make a major shift in their life, these two guys. They decided our ambitions are all wrong. We're living for the wrong thing. And they totally redirect their lives. One of them, it ends up taking a different career path altogether. The other one takes the same career path he was going to take, but ends up just living much more generously than he had ever thought he would. Now, at the end of the interview, this is what I found fascinating. The interviewer, this is several years after this experience, the interviewer says, hey, I want you guys to imagine that you never had that experience. What do you think your lives would be like now? This is great. The saver says, I would be living overseas, saving $10,000 a month in cash. He knew that because he had that very mapped out in an Excel spreadsheet. I'd be building a life for myself, probably pretty happy and satisfied in that as well. And then he says, the subtle tragedy that would come is that I would be creating a life of the rich fool for myself without knowing it. I would have lived my whole life building bigger barns and never have known the satisfaction I have now. The spender says, oh, I'd be living in a fancier house for sure. I'd be driving a nicer car. I'd be cutting my 10% tithe check every week and I would feel great about that. And I would probably think I was happy. He said, it's like I wouldn't have the capacity to experience the things that I've experienced as a result of living generously. So I wouldn't even know what I was missing. And then he says, I've often thought about the rich young ruler who we talked about a few weeks ago. He says, I would have gotten to the end of my life and I would have been obedient down the line, but totally missed out on the ride that God had for me because I wouldn't have had the courage to follow Jesus in this. And that last bit is key. It isn't about just deciding to give more money away. It's about deciding to follow Jesus with your money. That's where he takes us in verse 24. This is how we can really do it. This is how we can be free from greed and materialism and really be generous people. Serve God above all else. Verse 24, no one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You can't serve God and money. All right, so we're getting to the bottom of it now, aren't we? We started with just some good wisdom about how to relate to money and things, and then we got a warning about the power of money. But now we're getting to the root of the issue, which is our worship. I mean, look at the language. Serve, hate, love, devoted, despise. Right? This isn't a logic problem. This is a heart thing. John Pennington says it this way. I call him John like we're friends. Jonathan Pennington, I believe, is the right word. He says, one cannot flirt with money as if it has nothing to do with one's inner person. You can't live greedily focused on money and serve God. It's about your worship. To drive the point home, Jesus here personifies money or mammon as a potential master that competes for your loyalty with God. Mammon, as I said, just means money and things money can buy. There are some interpretations that see mammon and as a reference to the pagan god named Mammon. And either way, the point is the same. It's just that Jesus is saying, like, money can be like a god. It can be like a master, and it demands something of you. Master Mammon tells you this. He says, you don't have enough. You deserve better. If you're thinking about career options, Master Mammon says, it's easy. Take the one with the most money. No-brainer. Doesn't matter if you don't like it. Doesn't matter if it's not good for people or society. Just go where the money is. If there's a need around you, Master Mammon says, oh, slow up. You have needs. You know, if you use your money to meet their needs, who's going to take care of you? Just think about that. Maybe just tell them you pray for them. Master Mammon makes you think that you always need more. And the result is that you overwork, you overspend, you oversave, and you undergive. That's why most of us feel stretched thin and stressed out about money, because Master Mammon just wears you down. Master Mammon shapes our desires so that whatever it is we have to do to fulfill those desires eventually competes with God. And it's subtle, and it happens over time. It's just a little greed, a little selfish ambition, a little more. And before you know it, through hundreds of little choices, you're serving Master Mammon, and you don't even know it. He is a deceptive and destructive master. He promises the world, but he leaves you with nothing. Jesus is not that way. He's generous and he's kind. He says, come to me, all who labor and who are worn out. I'll give you rest for your souls. Master Jesus tells you, though you bring nothing to the table, truly, I give you the kingdom. I give you everything. Those who mourn will be comforted. The meek will get the whole stinking earth. Those who hunger and thirst will be utterly satisfied. You truthfully, you were dead in your sins. So I died for you so that you might have new life. You were enemies of God. And so I took up the wrath of God upon myself so that you could be reconciled to him. You thought you had it all. I did have it all, and I gave all of it away. Why? So I could make you my treasure. That's what Jesus says. Peter says he chose us to be his treasured possession. And when you see what Master Jesus has done to make you his treasured possession, it makes you want to treasure him above all else, and that's what he wants us to do. Master Jesus shapes our desires such that whatever we do to fulfill them brings us closer to God and deeper into the life of his kingdom. With Master Jesus, you see things the way they really are. God is God. And money is just money. What does it mean to treasure Jesus above all else? He tells a parable about this, and it's as far as I know, it's the shortest parable there is because it's actually quite simple. I'm not saying it's easy, I'm just saying it's simple. Here's the parable, Matthew 13:44. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found, and he covered it up. Then in his joy, he goes and sells all that he has, and he buys the field. That's it. It's just understanding the relative value of Jesus above everything else in your life and being joyful to let it all go that you might have him. As we come to the table today, here's the image I want you to have in your mind. I love the way we do this because you have to get out of your seats and come forward. And it always, in my mind, speaks to some sense of like, I see Jesus. I see what he's done for me. It moves me to action to go and to follow him. And so I just want you to like symbolically imagine today that you are leaving your seat, leaving all of your money and things behind because of the surpassing value of Jesus and what he's done for you. Let's pray.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.